There are five centers that a company could be. One is being competitor-centric, then product-centric, technology-centric, business model-centric, and finally, the most important, being customer-centric.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of How to Product, a podcast series on product management brought to you by PM School and your host, Arjav Jain. This podcast series is focused on bringing in product leaders from across the globe and creating valuable content on product management for our listeners with a key focus on early in career product professionals. Looking to make a career transition to product management? Take the first step to becoming an amazing product manager. PM School will help you get tested on product skills. We do everything we possibly can to kickstart your PM career, and we would help you prepare a resume, practice interviews, and even help you in salary negotiation. Talk to us to understand how to approach companies and plan your move into product management. We have a two-month remote program you can join us from anywhere that prepares you to excel in your first job as a product manager or to make a smooth transition to a leading product role in your current or new organization. This episode is about a topic that's close to my heart, which is designing with delight. So let's dive straight into the episode. I have with me Surbhi Gupta, a LinkedIn top product management voice. Surbhi started her career as a software engineer and then grew in her role quickly and started product consulting at various companies like SiriusXM, Oracle, and Intuit. She was a lead PM at Tesla, had a brief stint at Meta, and is now a product leader at Zoox, Amazon's autonomous vehicle company. Interestingly, she was a radio show host in the US. She's an alum of the prestigious New York University, and she was a guest lecturer at the NYU Stern School of Business. And that's not it. She's also participated in the New York Fashion Week and won a beauty pageant as well. She's mentored startups through Plug and Play Accelerators and coached students through Product School. That's easily the most colorful intro I've ever written for someone, Surbhi. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, Arjav. It's really nice and to be here. I'm excited to talk about how to do product more.
Awesome. Looking forward to this conversation. I'm sure there's so much to get out of this. I'm very excited, so all ready to jump in. Before we talk about product, I want to know a little bit more about the human behind this product leader that Surbhi is, right? So quickly, three rapid-fire questions for you. What's a book that you're currently reading?
Book I'm currently reading, it's called The Power of Moments. Mm-hmm. So the main idea is that there are certain moments which we remember, like let's say in this podcast, there will be something that I'll remember, you will remember while recording, and listeners will remember when they are listening, not everything. So the idea is we actually leave it to by chance, like, okay, something will be created. So this book actually encourages people, how can you create those moments? Maybe it's somebody's birthday, you are giving a presentation. So disclaimer, I am not planning to incorporate it today because I'm reading it, but the idea is really interesting. So we'll see how it, maybe I'll use it in the future.
So it sounds like a really interesting book. I think the moments are the ones that like stay with people, right? So it's wonderful if you're in a position to be able to craft them. So awesome. I'll give it a read as well. Thank you for that recommendation. What's the best advice someone's given you?
Yeah, so don't operate when you are in fear or anger. The reason is it's linked through our minds. And I have seen multiple times, it's through Matt Machari. I did his course. And this was something, that was a moment that I captured from the entire course. Because when we like writing an email, everybody tells us don't write an email when you are in anger. But fear, whether it's like fear of anything in personal, professional thing, that okay, this is a stakeholder is not going to agree, we are not going to launch, just take a moment, stay calm. I think that's where miracles happen. I've personally seen it in Tesla when I joined the work environment. My project was really intense. There was not trust in this product. Three PMs had already left, and I had 104 stakeholders to manage. So I was doing a practice at the time that helped me to stay calm every day. No matter what, I'll take this break at 5:30 in the evening, and it will just recharge and reset my mind. So I think yeah, that is the best advice. I took it from Matt.
Awesome. And what are your hobbies outside of work?
Yes, I like things like this podcasting.
Uh-huh.
Really connecting with people. Talking mindfully, like in a radio talk show host, emceeing, things like this. I do enjoy a lot.
Lovely. I'm really looking forward to this. So let's begin. Central to product management is the art of addressing critical customer needs, right? And while aligning with business goals and infusing delightful solutions into the final product. But before we really explore the delight aspect, could you share insights on how product teams can effectively validate if the customer problem they're aiming to solve is genuine and aligns with the needs of their target audience?
Excellent question. So I would say that, yeah, when we are trying to solve the problem, we have to really put emphasis what people problem are we trying to solve and is it a real problem? I'm sure you might have heard Judy Zoll, VP of Product Design at Facebook, advocates about it so much. So I start with this framework. When you have first creating the problem, I'll spend maybe 10 seconds on that, and then how can we validate it? So really the problem you're trying to solve is for a normal human. So make it very simple, straightforward, solution agnostic. Just that gets to the why people have this problem. It should be not only functional, which usually people use with jobs to be done framework, but go one step beyond, uncover the emotional or social aspect of the problem. So in a nutshell, the problem should be really human. I think that's where you can solve it. And now once you have defined this problem clearly, understand that what is the customer's context beyond this problem? Maybe your product is solving, for example, Intuit TurboTax is helping people to file taxes. But there are other problems throughout the year that, okay, I need to collect certain, if somebody has a business, they need to collect all these other things that they need to report. And maybe people want to save taxes, get educated, they are not over or underpaying. So there are other problems around the product, not just filing is just one part of it. That's how you can make your product better. So understanding that customer context on why they are facing this problem. And one more thing, really not everybody is going to have the same problem. So identifying your target segment, who is actually getting that problem, because maybe there is a wider customer base who might also get some value, but you need to focus why this particular customer segment is getting this problem, and identifying their pain points will help you. Then also quantify the problem. Is it very few people who are facing this problem, or is it a larger customer base? Because that should match with the mission that you have. For example, Apple wants to focus on a niche market, luxury products, but maybe Google wants to help everybody. That's their mission, help everyone to make the information searchable. So if you are a company like Google, you need to solve a problem that resonates with a lot of people, because then you wouldn't be disappointed if only 0.1% of the population is using in a particular city, right?
Right.
So, and lastly, also validate your assumptions by going to the users. There are so many tools, ethnographic surveys, interview surveys, usability data. I think there are so many. So just go through them, then iterate and get to the root of the problem.
Right. I love the framework you spoke about, and especially the point where you really make the problem simple, straightforward, and solution agnostic. I think a lot of times PMs are stuck in that loop of they get married to a solution and then they work backwards and try to frame a problem around it just to sort of push their solution ahead. But really detaching yourself from the solution and marrying yourself to the problem is step one. And it's, I think, easily one of the most important things to in this process.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even, in interview settings, people often have a prompt and they are jumping, the ideas start coming in their mind and they are jumping to go in that direction. I always say, forget about solution. Just think about the problem. Einstein said that once, and I really love that he spends 95% of the time in really understanding the problem, and then solution is just 5% of the thing. It may or may not be true, but that's the idea, that really focus on the problem.
Awesome. And love the framework about identifying problems outside of the current problem that, in just the current context that customers have, identifying the segment, quantifying that problem, and then validating if that through research and other mechanisms, right? Love the framework. Thank you for that. Now, we'll talk a little bit about design with delight. And what does design with delight mean in the context of product management? And how can product managers really infuse joy, satisfaction, and surprise into user experience to create products that really resonate with their customers?
Awesome. You already answered that. So design with delight in context of building products, in my opinion, is that a product doesn't have to just solve the functional needs. Of course, it has to solve the functional needs, but going one step beyond that, that invokes positive feelings of this joy, satisfaction, and even some present delight, surprise to the users. So it's more than just utility that actually resonates with the users. I work for Tesla, and I actually, that's one moment again that I remember what Elon said in one of our town halls. Build products that customers actually love. You should not build a car like if you spend all this money that you have to take to a service center all the time. So that's why they have this over-the-air updates. And the idea about Tesla is that you don't have to go to a service center, because you can be a car manufacturer where you provide excellent service. Like most German cars, they give you loaners, and their offices are amazing. Here you service coffees and lunches. The idea is customers should not even go to that extent. They will be more happy if they don't need that, and you can resolve either through like over-the-air updates, or you know, they don't have to come in. So I think I would advocate that. So that's going one step beyond what you are building in your product. That's designed with delight. And few things that PMs can do is, first, you might first have heard it many times, but I'll say it again, have user-centered design where you understand your users well to uncover, again, their pain points, desires, emotional triggers. I'll share an example. One of my friends was sharing that he was building a travel product, and it was targeted for families, group travelers, parents. So he was like, he uncovered this problem that parents are taking their children during summer vacation for a travel. The idea is that, yeah, the product can help them to book itineraries, booking, get theme park tickets, everything. But they did an experiment where they put a small teddy bear in the room of kids and wrote it like, your parents love you and that's why they are here. Kids loved it. So the idea was, parents are spending all this money and time. Ultimately, they just want to showcase their kids, or they really love their kids and want to, you know, just make them happy, and kids get that feeling back. And it made both parents and kids happy. How many products do that, right? So it's like going one step beyond. And that's what I would say. Understanding that why somebody here is booking a vacation just to get that emotional feeling that their kids feel. So that's one example. Other than that, I'll of course say, keep your product simple, like how Apple does it. Clean, simple, intuitive interface. Reduce complexities, because it should resonate with normal humans in India, I would say, like man woman. People not expecting super complicated products. Have micro interactions that give feedback, like how this book it's is about giving, like you can create a new product but that doesn't resonate with the user's mental model, then it's going to be hard for the user to understand. Like, I'm an Android user, but I develop an iPhone app. It's sometimes very hard for me because not intuitive. Like, I can use my Android while driving, while maybe sleeping, but the controls are very different for a different phone. But that's ecosystem. People usually don't work across ecosystems. But imagine if you develop an app and that's totally not using the mental model, the information hierarchy that people are used to. So don't do many new things unnecessarily. That is not, that would add to the delight. So other than that, you can add these micro moments, as I was saying, for the travel example, in your product that just surprises user. And many products do that. I like Intuit's TurboTax a lot. I worked for Intuit, like how they made filing more fun and engaging rather than a very boring, mundane task that people just keep procrastinating. Gamification, personalization are other things that products use. So we can leverage, like how Duolingo made gamified version of gamified experience to learn a new language. So I think these are certain examples that can inspire product teams.
Interesting. Do you think any of this sort of varies based on your audience that you're designing for and the domain that you're in? Like a banking app, for example, right? Versus this travel app, which is, the travel app is more sort of leisure, it's more fun, but a banking app is supposed to be more functional than delight. But if you had to think of a delight for a use case like a banking app, what do you think comes to mind there?
Great question. So, you know, Capital One, when I moved to US, they are still pretty innovative. So it was a banking app. Usually, what do you think? Banking app, like a B2B to C software, really boring.
Exactly.
Not having a lot of errors, screen load time, but they made it super easy. They were the first ones, as far as I remember, which like they were helping you to deposit a check directly through the app. I haven't validated it, but as far as I remember, it was just making users' life easier. That, okay, right, I don't have to go to ATM. If the phone is offering camera, we can scan and deposit the check. So it's both functional as well as like saving me time. And I actually was having some other bank accounts, but I was like, okay, every time I have to deposit a check, it has to be Capital Bank. Similarly, they were doing many such things which were functional, but at the same time, like the process was so easy that you could just scan. It doesn't have to be like, oh, your check has to come, it has to be perfect picture. So right, those were, I felt very delighted that it's like, yeah, I can just use my regular phone. I don't have to scan the check or anything, and it can cut on its own.
Right.
So I think those are very small examples, but very boring banking app could be interesting, which is like my companion app whenever I have to do any money transaction. Venmo, actually.
Yeah.
That's a good example how they made peer-to-peer transfer super interesting.
Yeah.
So they have emojis, like when you transfer money to your friend, you can say shopping and you can actually put the shopping emoji or something. So and you don't have to share it with your friends, but they allow to share it publicly or with friends, like I'm going shopping, going to restaurants. So it's like, I think it was very refreshing to see a peer-to-peer kind of like this kind of app trying to make it social and fun for people.
That's a very interesting example, and I think what I sort of take away from that is spend some time in even understanding the whole customer journey of them interacting not just within the app but outside of the app with, let's say, the bank, right? Like, why do customers come to the bank? And it goes back to your first point that you made about Tesla, which is customers shouldn't even come to that service center in the first place, right? So if the bank can enable customers to take actions while sitting at home, that's another moment of delight. It doesn't necessarily have to be these are just identifying your jobs to be done and how customers sort of interact. Lovely example.
And if you're doing, do it with thinking about this. Customers don't have a good scanner, they have a crappy camera, maybe they are busy, so don't worry about the best background, because initially there are certain apps that require black background and so many things, and I'm like, I'm not gonna do it, right? So those are small things that really make your customers addicted to your product.
Interesting. So just from your personal experience, could you share some example where incorporating the design with delight principle led to improved user engagement or customer loyalty or whatever the goal that you were sort of driving for, right, in that product and organization? Want to hear how design with delight has helped you in moving that metric?
Yeah, I could share a few things. Like, we were building, it was one of the startups I used to work with.
Okay.
And the problem we were trying to solve, generally, it was in telecom space.
Okay.
So people had shared plans, right? With friends and family. But we were seeing this use case in emerging market where people were very cost conscious. Mm-hmm. Then they were frequently changing their plans. Let's take an example of India.
Yeah.
People generally give the sponsor their drivers, householders, like telco plan, so that they're always connected, because these guys have the phone, but usually they don't have money to recharge.
Right.
And sometimes these are transient jobs, right? It's not like a full-time job, and people come and go, they are not for years. It's unpredictable, let's put it that way. So we were seeing a lot of this behavior where people would add it to their account and then remove it. And if it's happening in mid-cycle, people are not sure about their billing, how much usage they are giving. And it adds a lot of complexity if you are like, if you're making invoicing, billing in your system.
Yeah.
There was a requirement from the customer that we want either this sharing to happen like dynamically, because we were actually providing it at end of the month.
Okay.
So then disputes, but this involved a lot of complexities behind the scenes, and not going to that.
Sure.
So it was like kept in product backlog for a long time. But then, you know, I was inspired by this Air Miles gifting. I was gifting my miles. I was in consulting to one of the friends, like just transferring the miles. It's idea came. What if people are actually, what is the people's problem here? They're not looking to share or add somebody to their account. By talking to these users, the idea was they just want to sponsor someone's data, voice, text. What if they enable gifting, which is like not committed, one multiple times in a month they can do,
right,
rather than committed sharing? And it resonated with users, and it was very easy technically to do, because you don't have to worry about disputes, going arrears, charges, and everything, all those complexities in billing and invoicing.
Yeah.
So the idea was, anyone at any point of time, if you are in the same service provider, like you both have Verizon service, you can gift, choose what amount you want to give it to someone, and that's it. So people love this product. So I felt that this was really understanding the users, their problem, and going unconventional route, which is like just converting sharing into gifting.
Lovely. And I think this insight mainly again came from talking to users, understanding why they want to do what they're doing, right? And then you uncover that, okay, they actually just want a sponsor. They don't want to, like, you don't want complexities of the whole, like you said, invoicing. I agree that can get super complex.
So, people's groups, how they are holding one.
Yeah.
You have to move around, right?
Yeah.
Moving one account from another account. Mm-hmm. So they were not in complexity. So it changed on metric. Actually, many users started using our service. So it was not like less number of these movements and customer inquiries. But also people love this product, and we got lot of new users and increased lifetime value for these subscribers.
Interesting. So this helped in your top of the funnel acquisition with go to market. It helped with LTV and helped with just, you know, more recurring transactions happening on the platform as well.
Yeah.
Right. Lovely example. Now talking a little bit about balancing functionality and aesthetics. Right now we spoke about delight and introducing these moments of delight, but how can product managers ensure that delightful design does not compromise usability and functionality while still creating a memorable user experience, right? And just adding on to that a little bit is, sometimes we go down the path of, hey, let's put in like the best animation, let's put in a great message here, but then in a lot of cases it could slow down the task that the user is actually wanting to complete. So how do you find that balance between delight and functionality, usability?
Yeah, actually great question. So I would, as you said, really focus again, start with the user. What are their needs? Because once you start to understand your user, you have to like design that meets both their functional needs as well as this pleasing them aesthetically with the product design. I would prioritize functionality on that, because you don't want your product to become a kitchen sink as well. Like every user need you are trying to do, and the product becomes so bloated that it's like it's not providing value, or the real value is buried under so many features.
Right.
And then, you know, this thing, like as I was saying, hierarchy of needs, establish like hierarchy of needs, where you understand that basic user needs are met in context of design, and you always prioritize functionality, usability, or, you know, look and feel, aesthetics.
Yeah.
So I think a product has to be useful no matter how beautiful it is. If it's not providing you the functionality, you're not going to use it.
Right.
So to do that, maintain consistency in UI, I think lot of great designers follow that. Sometimes we give them some feedback and they're like, oh, but it's going to break the consistency. It is not going to meet the hierarchy, information hierarchy. So especially in the, and even complicated B2B applications, always follow that how can you help user take latest. I think the third point would be always refer to the latest designs, what's coming in the market, how people are shifting with latest technologies. I'll give an example here. I use this Muse meditation headband.
Okay.
So the reason I love this product, it's my favorite product, is so meditation is very interesting. People from childhood I hear that, oh, it's something very useful for you. But I would go, like, what are the alternatives to learn? You go to classes, you go and download online apps. But it's a very one-way process. You, like, as a user, I never knew that, do I get it or not? Because my teacher might be in a different zone, right, and I'm in a different zone. And right, even these apps like Calm and all, Headspace, they do guided meditation, but there's never a validation, like a feedback to the user, how you are performing. So this app, Muse, actually they did, it's a headband along with the app that you wear, and it gives you real time signals, alpha, beta, gamma rays, by telling you how it analyzes that and tells you how calm your mind is. But the best thing is, it doesn't, you don't have to open your eyes. So it's using audio as a feedback mechanism versus any complicated video chats or anything like that. So, and audio also is like, not like it's talking to you, it's just using subtle sounds like rain. So if your mind is not calm, the rain will have thunderstorms, or the, if you have so it's not talking to you, it is giving you subtle hints, because it understands that user is meditating. If I give them, talk to them, like, you know, if my product is talking or asking to open their eyes and see, then it's just going to break the entire process. Versus, I also tried this other product, HeartMath. It's very common. Not to criticize, it's interesting, but the UI was not good. And I don't know if they've improved it, but I tried it a couple, 7-8 years ago. The product is, you wear something, it reads your heart resonance. But it's showing you complicated graphs. And while doing it, I was like, oh my God, my brain was not meditating or staying calm. I was trying to understand how these graphs are, and they were so complicated, like ECG, that in a way I was more stressed. What's happening? So I think clever use of interface here, which doesn't always have to be visual. You can use other senses of users. So that's why I love how they actually use audio as way to give the information that user needs and adjust it in real time. And in the end, once your session is done, you can see. And they also use, like, they're using so many clever elements. I'm not going into the detail, but you can see as a user, it incorporates number one feedback in real time. And user is able to improve and see how they are performing in the end.
Lovely example. And I think what I sort of take from that is the functionality of you meditating is not changing. Like, you are able to achieve that goal of yours. Now, they have found ways around it to introduce delight that that you don't break from your meditation session. It's, you're still, your eyes are closed, you're still trying to calm yourself, and they found delight. They found ways to introduce delight in that. Lovely example again. I love how many examples this episode already has. So thank you for that. And all right, so quickly talking about sort of the whole, throughout the product development process, right, which is all the way from discovery to MVP, to launch, GTM, you know, then you do the 0 to 1, 1 to 100, the whole journey. How can product managers really maintain a strong focus on delivering delightful solutions without losing sight of the overall sort of customer needs as well as the business needs, right? Now, we've spoken so far about customer needs. Want to focus a little bit more about the business needs as well.
Okay, interesting. Actually, I have a different mindset here. So,
okay,
you know, I always advocate to be customer centric. So, I got inspired by this Kellogg's course. So, they have shared, there are five centers that a company could be. One is being competitor centric. Then product centric, technology centric, business model centric, and finally, the most important, being customer centric. So they talk about how in the olden world, people used to think everything is like Earth's geocentric, versus then they discovered heliocentric, and how the entire understanding of the universe changed. And similarly, if you're customer-centric, you're focused on customer needs and preference, everything ties in. So I'm not saying don't think about business model, technology, or competition, but focus on customer. The reason is, if you focus on just business model, then you will trade off with the customer needs. And in the long term, it's not going to help. Let's take an example of Facebook. It's a very common question that Facebook even asks in the interviews. What if they want to increase the revenue and they start showing you more ads instead of your friend's feed? Like, how many would the, you know, how many ads should we show? So So the idea is you have to see how much engagement on ads is, could be low unless ads are very relevant. Of course, Meta is really good at making it relevant, more and more relevant. But that's a trade-off. Are you going to lose users' engagement? What if there are only ads? Nobody's going to come versus it's only no ads. Like friends feed, then zero revenue. But you find a healthy balance with a lot of A/B tests, user research, and metrics here, where you don't lose user engagement, it's not annoying to the users, and then at the same time make ads so useful that users actually get to know more things.
Right.
So the idea here is if I get blindsided and only focus on business metrics, I might get short-term gains, but in longer term, I would not have any customers, users, my DAU, MAU, everything is going to drop and ultimately it's not going to help me. So I would say be focused on the customer. Similarly, many product teams fall in love with their product. They don't pivot the product if the market changes. That's also actually a to fail because you cannot really have a successful product if your customers' needs are not again. Sorry, I had a doorbell, so I
think
I
heard. Don't worry.
I was saying, similarly, many product teams are very product centric, where they actually lose focus on the customer and they are afraid to pivot the product even if the market is saying that customers want something else. So that's a key to failure, that you're not evolving. So that's a big no again.
Yeah.
Similarly, being technology centric doesn't help because you have a latest technology and you are just focused on technology but not on the customer needs. But if you are focused on customer, you will definitely leverage the latest technology to help them.
Right.
So the idea is look at your customers, see the competition, look at the technology, look at everything else, revenue, but focus on the customer and then see how can you actually use all of these other things to still help your customer.
Right. I think it's like focus on customers, but with the lens and guardrails of, like you said, competitors, the product, the technology, and the business, and find ways in which you can introduce delight, but not at the cost of, like you said, not at the cost of business, not at the cost of technology, not at the cost of product or of your competitors, right? Lovely framework. I think this is the first time I'm hearing about this. So lovely framework. So I'm definitely going to go in and read more about this, but makes a lot of sense. So quickly moving on, right? And talking about rapid experimentation and how people talk about, let's fail fast, let's learn fast, let's keep deploying, keep being that mode of bias for action. How can product teams strike a balance between speed and thoughtfulness to ensure that customer delight is not compromised while deploying quickly, learning from the process and iterating to build that final solution? So maybe what I'm getting to is, how do you maintain that balance between speed and how much to delight, or when do I want to experiment quickly and learn and maybe compromise on delight? So what are your thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting topic, to balance speed and thoughtfulness by doing rapid experimentation.
Yeah.
I would say that before doing any experiment, I would have a clear objective, like why I'm doing this experiment. So not only you as a product manager or like you should understand or your data analyst, but the entire team should understand that if we are doing, we have this problem, we have this hypothesis, and this is what we're looking for. If we do this experiment, we will get some result and then we need to take some action.
Yeah.
So you need to align your stakeholders around that, because many teams run experiments, but then they are not really working on the outcomes of the experiment. And also you should not be biased, because I've also seen some experiments just are done to confirm the bias in your mind. So then you will get the information you're looking for. Like if I say, in Google, there is an interesting, funny thing that if you search anything on Google that Earth is square, maybe you will find those results.
Yeah, right? No, I get it. Yeah.
So you have to really be very, very unattached to the experiment's outcome, but have clear objective of why you're doing the experiment. That will help you to maintain focus. And it will also help you to prioritize experiments. Imagine a big company like Meta on Instagram, if you're doing experiments, and if for every decision without focused outcome you're doing experiment, they are gonna clash and the results are not super easy to consume. So assess whether this makes sense. So I would really start here, whether this particular problem is valid enough to conduct an experiment? Do we have good data, enough users, depending on your company's size, the number of user base? And also, there are risks to the experiment because maybe you are not getting good data and then you are blindsided. I have certain examples here where sometimes you just do an experiment because, okay, it's the best practice to do it. But then the results are not what are really like the right, like I would say they are superficial results, not real true results. Okay. And then you take the wrong decision. So be alert with that. There are some case studies published by a lot in my other talks as well. For the sake of time, I'm not going into the details. Then I think similarly for design, focus on user-centered approach to usability design. Don't do everything in one go, because if you are changing something, definitely, let's say there is latest technology and your customers' problems are solved through that, you want to incorporate, but understand their mental model, start small, and then iterate on that, because then you can learn fast from failing. Let's say Google Glass failed because they didn't focus on a particular customer, no problem to solve, and customers were confused why, what, how to use it. So really, really focus on customer, get their feedback, and make it an iterative process so that you can learn from your experiment. And your experiment should tie to the business goals also. That's a good opportunity, as you were asking earlier, that yes, it's helping users, but also what are the impacts on our business metrics.
Right. Okay, lovely. Surbhi, this has been nothing short of great. But before I let you go, you've had an opportunity to work with plenty PMs in your career. So do you have any tips for, you know, budding product managers who are trying to break into this field?
Yeah, as you said, I always used to think what makes certain PMs like really successful than others. Not everybody product leader.
Yeah.
No one wants to build products that are not successful or have a career that's not great. What really differentiates is, I think one of the things that I have found, because PMs work with a lot of other people, like different type of stakeholders, a lot of XFN collaboration. And most of these people don't report to directly join a new company. It's a startup where founders already have a very strong grasp on the problem.
Yeah.
They're smart engineers, maybe more smarter than you, who understand the problem very well. So how can you work with them in a nice collaborative way? Influence, because PMs also have strong opinions. How can you influence?
Yeah.
And the right prioritization. So I think this is something what has helped me is really having that mindset shift by maintaining your calm and going that they say in the state of flow. So different people have different way to achieve their state of flow and maintaining their calm and going back to where we started. So that is mindset, that how do you work with other people effectively. I learned something from VP of Messenger in Facebook. In one of the talks, she talked about cumulative growth. That concept resonated with me so well. So it was the idea that how can you really succeed in your career? It was a career fireside talk. Think about cumulative growth, like how can you take everyone along, align similar shared goals, find that goal, and then you all can grow together, versus just thinking how can I win. I think that's a success recipe for your career as well as building products. So change that mindset, stay calm to achieve cumulative growth, because people are not always logical. You will have up and down moments, but how can you work together successfully? That would be the key thing I can share with other folks, other than technical skills. Yeah.
Of course. No, thank you. This is great advice. We haven't really had anyone speak about these aspects. So lovely to have that perspective in. And again, golden words of wisdom. Thank you so much. This whole episode has been full of great examples, full of wisdom. And I'm sure our listeners are going to love this. So thank you so much, Surbhi.
Pleasure to have a chat with you. Looking forward to re-listening.
If you're interested in solving product case challenges or experiencing what a PM does by stepping into the shoes of a product manager in a live program, you should check out pmschool.io. If you like what you heard, do share this with friends, colleagues, and family members, and give us a rating on your favorite podcast streaming app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. We'll be back with another one very soon. Until then, stay curious and stay safe. This is your host, Arjav Jain, signing off.